Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Unhump Day edition of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I have figured out the absent guest, Charlotte Dennett, will be joining me on tomorrow's big program about 3:30 Central Time. And in this case, I blame her booker. But anyways, we've worked it out. We've coordinated our schedules. She'll join tomorrow. Again, she is the author of Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy. And the lost spy is her dad. And the deadly politics of the great game of oil. We're going to talk about ruble policy and Ukraine and Russia. We're just going to do it on Thursday's big show. I hope you tune in again tomorrow. And we've got a few fine callers. I hope they're fine. They have been holding over since hour one. We're going to go to the phones next at 844-967-2789. I believe Lawrence is next from St. Paul. Welcome, Lawrence. What do you got for us?
Always a pleasure. I'm going to talk about the George Floyd murder.
Yes, sir.
Now, that seems kind of odd, doesn't it?
There was a guilty plea today in the federal Derek Chauvin. So I'm just fine if we go there next, Lawrence.
Oh, okay. Well, and that's good. But what I was just kind of using that as a parallelism or analogy, how quickly we took that from the headline. You see how quickly that left the headline over a couple of years ago? A year ago? That's how quickly the abortion issue is going to leave the headline. And what will we be left with? I'll tell you. We'll be left with that the fact that it will be illegal to have an abortion over 25% of the country. That's what, because we'll forget. See, this is what we do as Americans, and especially black people. Black people, we get angry for a minute, we protest, and then we go back to being second-class citizens. Hmm. And every law affects us. Now, and here's something that your listeners may not want to hear. The Republican Party, they're great. I love them. You know why? Because they have successfully put their finger on the pulse of cultural wars and American hatred, and they used it to the best of their advantage, and they totally knocked the Democrats out. And here's the last thing I'll say. If you want to be real, our best bet, and I think you can argue this, I'll take my answer off the air. I think you can argue this. Our best bet is to actually vote for Mitt Romney or Liz Cheney. And because if we vote for a Democrat, we're going to get crushed. What we want to do is get somebody in their head that has some kind of cognitive ability. Even though we'll hate their policies, at least you'll know that they're really following the Constitution. And then once we get that going, then we can fight the next cycle. We're just going to get blistered this cycle. And let's be pragmatic.
That's not the truth. Sir, I don't know you, but I disagree with you on this point. I don't think that a red wave is a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination. Recent polling, even Rasmussen polling, which is the Republican polling effectively, has Joe Biden improving and has the generic Democrat leading the generic Republican in the midterm. So if it's, you know, are you going to vote Democrat or Republican? Right now, more people say they're going to vote Democrat. And I know the history. I know the party in power gets, you know, shellacked in the midterms, or at least that's what history would tell us. But, you know, I think these are strange times, Lawrence. We learned earlier this week that the former president, Donald Trump, wanted to shoot Black Lives Matter protesters. Well, you know what?
Yeah.
That was, we didn't know that in the last elective cycle. Now we do. We know that Roe v. Wade in all likelihood is going to be overturned. Well, that's going to be disastrous. Like half the American states would ban abortion in real time. Well, Lawrence, if now is not the time that the American people wake up, I mean, I don't think we can afford a Mitt Romney or a Liz Cheney presidency to think that somehow that's going to hold the dam back. You know, we're just going to have a moderate Republican. Sir, if we don't win the midterms, if we don't win the House and the Senate and create some sort of, you know, framework of fair voting and electoral college that makes sense and codify things like, you know, women's abortive rights, that's going to mark the end of our society, sir. And I know I get a lot in my head about democracy at risk because of the Republican efforts to overturn the last election in this nation. But I also live under the great benefit of being a middle-class white male. You know, I don't live your life. I don't walk in your shoes, sir. You know, if I were you, I'd be mad as hell. I'm mad as hell for you, but yeah. It's not the same, Lawrence. You know what I mean? Me feeling bad for my friends that are my daughter, my wife, I mean, I'm mad for them today. But I'd be burning stuff down if I was a black man living in this country today under the sort of stuff going on. You know what I mean? If this was happening to white men, it would be done quickly. People would be losing their freaking minds.
If this were happening to the white men, wouldn't they be doing exactly what they're doing now? And that's the genius of the whole thing. But you just said what I just said. The black race, our black people in general, and I'm not talking about all of them, we have a tendency to get angry and then go back to being second-class citizens.
Is that because
you just illustrated that.
Lawrence, I apologize for keep interrupting you, sir. Is that because do you feel like there's never any change for the better? You know what I mean? You elect Barack Obama. Nothing got a hell of a lot better. You elect Joe Biden. Nothing got a hell of a lot better. But if someone like Donald Trump gets elected, life gets a hell of a lot worse. Do you see it in those terms, or am I misconstruing this, sir?
No. I think you got two-thirds of it right. Because, I mean, Donald Trump cannot make it any worse than we already have it now. Look, what's worse than killing a black person in broad daylight in the middle of the street by a police officer? What's worse than that? So it doesn't matter if Donald Trump's in or Joe Biden for us, you see. And let me qualify my statement here. I have the privilege of going around the whole country on a regular basis. I'm an airline pilot by trade. I get the chance to go around the country, and you know what the blackest fear is saying? That if you can send $83 million over to Ukraine and you can't hold one police officer accountable, with the exception of Chauvin, then you can't have my vote. That's what the blackest fear is saying. And I think you and I agreed on that for a small portion. You can see where we're coming from. Why would we help you when you're sending all this immediately? You put Ukraine on the television 24/7, and you can't do anything for us. And that's what's happening, going around in the blackest sphere across the country. They're not going to vote for Joe Biden because he did nothing for us. He did nothing except a bunch of promises. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem I see, even amongst a lot of white people, too, especially young.
Lawrence, were you supportive of Joe Biden when he was in the primary? I was a Bernie guy, and I look at Joe Biden's presidency, and I think he lacks communication abilities. I wish he was out there more forcefully more often, but I don't think he's been this god-awful president. I don't know where the anger comes from the right for this guy, but as a black man, were you supportive of his candidacy? I mean, if it wasn't for South Carolina, we'd probably be talking about President Bernie today on the radio.
Yeah, that's what we're... No, and I'll tell you, from the very first primary, I said it's going to be Joe Biden Biden. And you know why? Because I know how Americans are. I know how they are. And Senator Clyburn came on the air and said, Joe Biden was our best hope because white people are not going to vote for Kamala Harris. They're not going to vote for Bernie. And that's why James Clyburn kind of reiterated voting for Joe Biden. And when the first primary, I said, this guy is the worst guy off, but you got to vote for him because he's the only guy that's going to be accepted by a wide margin.
And Lawrence, part of the promise he made to Clyburn in the South Carolina primary, and in fact, Clyburn chased Joe Biden down backstage reportedly and said, go say it on the stage. And Joe Biden said, if I'm the president and I get a Supreme Court nomination, I'm going to put a black woman on the court. Does that earn Joe Biden anything in your mind, sir?
Yes, it does. And the fact that he did it, that's the only reason I'm like not totally disapproving of the Democratic Party, because he put the most qualified, not just the black person, he put the most qualified candidate up there that happened to be black. And to a black person, that's very important. Not putting a black person up there just because she was black, but the fact that she was the most qualified and black was the fact that a lot of black people respect that decision.
Well, because you'd have a hard time convincing them that on Fox News, but I got to tell you, it is my impression, be it Barack Obama. I mean, Barack Obama is just a better man than I ever hoped to be. This Ketanji Brown Jackson, so much smarter and better educated and just better than pretty much all the men on the court, as near as I can tell. Smarter, better resume. Have you noted, and I'm sure you have, Lawrence, but I've noted as a white guy, black people to raise to the very highest echelons, it's not good enough to just be good. They've got to be better. Is that your thought as well, sir?
As, like I said at the beginning here, I'm a pilot. If I make a not so good landing, everybody knows about it. But if my white counterpart makes a not so good landing, it's just blown off. We have to be 10 times better in everything we do.
Lawrence, excellent phone call. Thank you so much for it. More Devil's Advocates on the other side.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Unhump Day edition. Your phone calls, they could be a part of this big program. I tell you what, man, whoever booked this show, let's fire that guy. I think it was me. And Dom helped. Dom helped with some of the confusion. We'll get through it. We'll work through it. And the phone calls, going to work through them as well. I believe Eric is next from Central Wisconsin. Eric, welcome to the big show. What do you got for us?
I just got a little food for thought for you.
Yes, sir.
Setting aside the whole abortion issue and the women's reproductive rights issue, if what Alito wrote was that the Supreme Court at that time was so egregiously wrong from the start in that decision, shouldn't every case that came before that panel of justices come back up for relitigation because they screwed up so bad?
Well, don't give me any bright ideas, Eric. No, I think you would look at the case by case.
And that would kind of it wouldn't be so good for the Supreme Court as an institution itself if that were the case.
But Eric, that it's not good even arriving at this conclusion. We don't have to jump to further conclusions and say, let's throw them all out, baby in the bathwater and everything. They are effectively saying, let's throw it all out anyways. This conclusion of the court, at least to my opinion, is basically saying law that's been decided and then redecided. And people make their life decisions predicated on consistency of the law. and we're going to take all this precedent right. out. And for the very first time in the history of the court, we're just, well, they have overruled prior precedent, but only to expand rights. It's the first time in the court's history, Eric, they've ever done so to take a right away, in this case, from women.
But they want to set a new precedent by overruling 50 years of precedent because one Supreme Court panel apparently was so incompetent that they got that decision wrong. What does that say for the institution as a whole, then?
Well, Eric, I appreciate the thought, but I would point towards it. It speaks to the current makeup of the court, the current partisan nature of the court. Of course, there was nothing wrong with the prior finding, the 7-2, I believe, ruling in Roe v. Wade. There was nothing inherently wrong about the makeup of the court at that time. The courts have subsequently been broken. If we should be looking at every ruling of the court, it's this current makeup of the court that is to be questioned. And then, you know, what do you do about it? Of course, you don't reopen every Pandora's box, although that's what Alito's draft ruling would effectively do. But what you have to start considering is opening up the Pandora's box, as they would call it, court packing. You have to consider rebalancing the balance of the court. This is a broken court. It is a partisan court. A 6-3 court, even with Roberts occasionally with the liberals, you've still got a overwhelmingly conservative court that doesn't reflect the wills or the values of the American people. So it's not the Sandra Day O'Connor court that screwed this up, the Blackburn court that wrote, I believe Blackburn wrote the Roe v. Wade decision. It's the current dichotomy of the court that screwed up. Eric, appreciate you listening up in central Wisconsin. Going to keep going down the phones. Someone on the north side of Madison, I believe it's Totter Billy. Totter, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I love listening to the call from Lawrence. I do get frustrated with people who are like, the Democrats haven't done enough. I can't get fired up to vote, come out and vote for them. And I think you've talked plenty about, you know, the transformative legislation that the current Democrats have gotten done that gets underplayed. But I do get frustrated with that. And we love sports analogies in this country. And I think about, you know, the Bucks make it to the conference finals. And so do you go, oh, well, let's just blow it up. It didn't work. No, you go out and you get P.J. Tucker and you get Drew Holiday and you win a championship. And that's
Bucks and six, baby.
That's what we have to do with the Democratic Party. We have to go. We're falling a little bit short, but we got to do more. We got to go out and get a Senator Mandela Barnes or a Senator Godlewski. And we got to expand our majority so we can win a championship, so we can get things done. Don't give up on the Democrats. Don't go, they haven't done enough. That's just wrong.
Well, I certainly haven't given up on the Democrats. I haven't given up hope for my country. But here's where the sports analogy starts breaking down, man. Joe Biden would be like 82 years old for the next elective cycle. I mean, as a coach, Totter Billy, you know, they'd be starting to consider putting him out to pasture. I think Red Auerbach even got put out to pasture about that age. As a player, as players advance in age in the league, excepting what's-his-face that plays for Tampa Bay and maybe on to someone else, they all get old and they give way to other leadership. And that's the only place where I really see this sports analogy breaking down. The Democratic Party hasn't replaced any of their elder, senior, veteran players. I mean, you got Joe Biden at the top. You got Nancy Pelosi. You got Chuck Schumer. The leadership of the party is octogenarian. And even here in the state of Wisconsin, Todd, you know, for the Democrats to pick up a better part and a better piece, well, here's what we never do. We never take out an incumbent, right? We're not going to get rid of Tony Evers just because we think we got a better power forward on the bench. No, Tony's our guy until Tony loses or dies, right? So it's not like sports. We don't plug in a new player. When one guy gets a little slow, you know, hauling Lambeer's ass up and down the court all day. Did I lose you in the sports analogies, Totter Billy?
No, I agree with you there. I think I'm just saying don't blow it all up. Don't give up on the team. You know, and I'm not saying you are, but when I hear somebody like Lawrence, who I was saying, I'm not sure I can go out and vote for the Democrats. You don't have to vote for Biden. I'm not saying that necessarily, but let's vote for somebody. We got.
Well, certainly don't vote red. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
Rebellions are built on hope.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Your calls always welcome here. Phone lines, they're wide open. 844-967-2789. Got my pal Evan here in the world headquarters lightly screening the calls. Got Fancy Brian in his Star Wars Made the Fourth Be With You t-shirt down in the Shaw. And welcoming callers and listeners worldwide, across the country, across the state of Wisconsin, wherever you're listening, we appreciate you doing so. And you tuned in just in time, because I got some breaking news. Militia group leader tried to ask Trump to authorize them to stop the transfer of power, you know, using violence. The Guardian reporting this happened to, you know, the story takes place on January 6, 2021. Here is the latest from The Guardian. Stuart Rhodes, the Oath Keepers militia group leader, charged with seditious conspiracy with the January 6th attack on the Capitol, tried to get a Donald Trump confidant to ask the former president to allow his group to forcibly stop the peaceful transfer of power, the Justice Department has alleged in court papers. Now, we've been waiting up Brown here for Merrick Garland Day for quite some time. And what has been, you know, what has been the thing we keep being told? Be patient because, you know, the DOJ works from the little fish up to the big fish. Well, now we're starting to get to the, you know, the stinking head of the big fish, the January 6th head. In this case was the former president, probably a little bit more. The previously unknown phone call, you know, because it wasn't on the call logs, I suspect, Fancy. The previously unknown phone call with unidentified individual appears to indicate the Oath Keepers had contacts with at least one person close enough to Trump that Rhodes believed the individual would be a good person to consult with his report. Oh, pardon me, request. Hey, can we go use violence at the Capitol to stop Joe Biden from being the president? What do you go ask the big guy? Go see what Trump thinks about that. That's what The Guardian's effectively reporting here. A little bit more. Once the Oath Keepers finished storming the Capitol, Rhodes gathered the Oath Keepers leadership around 5 p.m. and walked down a few blocks to the Phoenix Park Hotel in D.C., the Justice Department said on Wednesday in a statement of offense against Oath Keepers member William Wilson. The group then huddled in a private suite, the Justice Department said, where Rhodes called an unidentified person on a speakerphone and pressed the person to get Trump to authorize them to stop the transfer of power after the Capitol attack had failed to do so. So this is after, you know, the I love you, but go home now, right? That's what's being reported. Wilson, this is a direct quote. Wilson heard Rhodes repeatedly implore the individual to tell President Trump to call upon groups like the Oath Keepers to forcibly oppose the transfer of power. This individual denied Rhodes' request to speak directly with President Trump. Well, he didn't talk to anyone, or at least not a lot of people. Apparently, Kevin McCarthy. The extraordinary phone call indicates that Rhodes believed two important points. First, that he was close enough to the Trump confidant that he could openly discuss such a request. Right? You're calling for an armed insurrection. And you're doing so on a phone line from a hotel to the White House. And you're saying, get the big guy on the phone. I'm looking for permission. I want my permission slip. And second, that the confidant was close enough to Trump to be able to pass on the message. Rhodes and his attorney were not immediately reached for comment. Apparently, he's not making comments readily available. The previously unknown phone call surfaced on Wednesday, and charging documents against Wilson, the leader of the North Carolina chapter of the Oath Keepers, who pled guilty to seditious conspiracy and obstruction of an official proceeding as part of his plea agreement. The statement of offense said that Wilson was involved in efforts to prepare for January 6th with the national leadership of the Oath Keeper, and how Rhodes added Wilson to the DC op January 6, 21 group chat on the encrypted Signal messaging app. Rhodes, Wilson, this apparently from the, you know, offense statement filed with the Department of Justice, Rhodes, Wilson, and co-conspirators used this Signal group chat and others to plan for the January 6th. On the morning of the Capitol attack, Rhodes confirmed on the group chat that they had several well-equipped QRFs outside D.C., a reference to quick reaction forces. Now, I would point out, that's where they kept the cache of arms, right, Fancy?
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out, is that it also meant that they had enough people around there to affect this possible insurrection. They were, it's not like it was just some guy, hey, call the president, me and my four guns are going to go in. No, they had, like, cells ready to go.
A reference to quick reaction forces that the government said it believes were on standby to deploy to the Capitol with guns and ammunition. You know, the plot is thickened a little bit, hadn't it, folks? Around 2:34 p.m., the Justice Department said Wilson stormed into the Capitol through the Upper West Terrace doors as one of the first co-conspirators to breach the building, and by 2:38 p.m. was helping to pry open the doors to the rotunda from the inside. Now, the seditious conspiracy charge against Wilson is the latest in a string of recent such indictments. In January, Rhodes and 10 other Oath Keepers were charged with seditious conspiracy, an offense that carries up to 20 years in federal prison. That's kind of harsh for a tourist group. A little bit more here. As part of the criminal investigation into the January 6th, the Justice Department is also examining connections between the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, another militia group, having obtained text messages showing the two groups were in touch prior to the Capitol attack. Well, I think you got the makings of a criminal conspiracy here, my friend. The House Select Committee investigating the Capitol attack also believes, talking about the J6 committee, also believes the Capitol attack included a coordinated assault perpetrated by the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys to stop the certification of Joe Biden's election victory, The Guardian first reported last month. So this is the breaking news right now at this hour. There was an ask made via telephone by someone who was described here as a confidant to the president by an Oath Keeper leader. Put him on speakerphone. Hey, everyone should hear this phone call. That's an important call. Get the boss on the phone. We want to, what? Turn on the quick response cells, the armed cells of Oath Keepers. And this mob action didn't work. But what if we come in with guns blazing? Someone see if Trump's down for that. Well, this is new news. I had not heard this reported prior. And that's why it's breaking news right here on the Devil's Advocates. We like to break it for you. Some other breaking news in regards to the January 6th. Lordy, there's more tapes of Kevin McCarthy. And Kevin McCarthy, you know, he either did or didn't talk to the president about resigning in the face of a second impeachment, right? Told the caucus he was going to. But apparently when the rubber hit the road, he claims, well, he never actually pressed Trump to resign. You know, didn't have the courage when it really mattered. But here's some new, interesting, at least reporting of new audio. And I suspect this audio exists because they keep dropping it on the guy. You know, if there's this much tape, you know, like I know I've got like 10 years of audio tape and I've said lots and lots of things, I'd have a hard time going out first and publicly denying stuff, knowing it's all over years worth of tapes. Well, Kevin McCarthy, you've been caught. You've been punked, buddy. You're on the tape again. New reporting. On Wednesday, that's today, CNN revealed the existence of new audio with a call from GOP leadership that suggested House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy was sympathetic to the idea that former President Donald Trump should be removed from the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, but believed the 25th Amendment was an inadequate solution because it wouldn't remove him fast enough. So Kevin McCarthy wanted Trump out faster than the cabinet could act through the 25th Amendment. Like, that ain't good enough. And Lordy, there's a tape. A little bit more. Here's a quote, apparently. The call took place on January 8, 2021, 2 days after the insurrection, right? The audio was obtained for the new book, This Will Not Pass, Trump, Biden, and the Battle for America's Future by Jonathan Miller and Alex Burns. They are with the New York Times. At one point in the recording, McCarthy asked an aide for a readout of a separate call. It's not clear exactly what call he's referring to. The aide responds, I think the options that have been cited by the Democrats so far are the 25th Amendment, which is not exactly an elegant solution here. McCarthy interjects to say, that takes too long too. It could go back to the House, right? The aide responds, correct. If the president were to submit a letter overruling the cabinet and the vice president, two-thirds vote in the House and the Senate to overrule the president, so it's kind of an armful. McCarthy said at another point in the recording, what the president did is atrocious and totally wrong. But he also added that he believed the other option, impeachment, would divide the nation further. Caught between a rock and a hard place. A. Kevin McCarthy? A little bit more here. Ultimately, several Republicans in the House and Senate voted to impeach and convict Trump, respectively, for incitement of insurrection, although not enough in the Senate for a conviction. Subsequently, McCarthy, who did not vote for impeachment, you know that? You know, he's talking all this trash on tape to the caucus leadership. The 25th Amendment. That's not fast enough. We need a quicker remedy. But impeachment, now Mitch McConnell said, let the Democrats do our dirty work and get rid of that SOB for us. That apparently is what Mitch McConnell allegedly said. But McCarthy, you know, that wasn't a good enough solution either. So what did McCarthy do? Nothing.
He's a coward.
He went to Mar-a-Lago and he kissed Trump's ring and he kissed the former president's ass. And now he accepts all sorts of bad behavior from the caucus, right? Because, you know, God forbid he upset the apple cart and not become the speaker after the red wave and the Republicans win the midterms. You know, setting all other issues of the day, let's say the overturning of Roe v. Wade, in a vacuum. Because, you know, people are only going to vote on inflation and such. It's all Joe Biden's fault. Let's go, Brandon.
Yeah. Kevin McCarthy, I mean, he doesn't get to that level without being a political schemer. But what cowardice and political scheming. All he was doing was trying to get Trump out before he came home. And, he came home. Okay. No, I can't do it now. He wanted to get it out so fast so he didn't have to have his hands dirty at all. He's a coward. What a cowardly thing to do.
You know, you want to hear a, air quotes, courageous act? Apparently, Fredo Don Jr. met with the January 6th committee for several hours this week. Hours. I mean, that's a lot of I plead the fifth. Under advice of counsel, I plead the fifth. I mean, unless he sat there and did that for hours.
That's a lot of sweating and drinking water.
Well, this is relatively new reporting, according to Politico and other news outlets. The interview with the son of the former president, you know, Fredo, he's the elder, reportedly lasted several hours, according to unnamed sources. Don Jr., Trump Jr., joins a growing list of close associates and family members of the former president to cooperate with the committee. His sister Ivanka, her husband, and top Trump advisor Jared Kushner, and Trump Jr.'s fiancée Kimberly Guilfoyle. The best is yet to come. They all sat for interviews with the committee, CNN noted. And the publication added that Trump Jr. answered all the questions and did not assert the Fifth Amendment during the interview. Did not assert the fifth. So either he perjured himself, which is always probable with the Trump, or he buried the old man. Can't wait for June 9th. June 9th is going to be the first night. We're going to broadcast it live right here on the Devil Radio on the Shaw. Perhaps parts unknown, we're going to broadcast live the J6 committee hearings on what happened on the January 6th during the insurrection. And hell, new news? Apparently, the Oath Keepers looked for permission directly from Trump to shoot up the joint. Come back, more Devil's Advocates. Perhaps more breaking news as well.
I know how you feel, but go home and go home in peace.
The mood of the crowd was positive and festive.
The best is yet to...
Malarkey. The Devil's Advocates invented malarkey.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Brick House. I always get my ass up and shake it on the dance floor when Brick House plays. Oh, yeah. Thank you for listening to this big program. You can still be a part this hour, and it's getting better. And I'm sorry about some of the confusion over the bookings. I blame Dom and the bookers and everyone but myself. I could have organized the day a little better, perhaps, you know, laid a better plan, let's just say. But we've got a good plan for the next hour. We got Dom joining us in the Happier Happy Hour. You all love Dom. You listen every day. And Dom has booked a guy named Chaz Stevens, a guy from Florida. And this guy has a specific advocacy. If Florida's going to try to ban all these textbooks, right? He's going to use the very same law to try and ban the Bible. So Chaz Stevens joins us at 5:30 Central Time. That's going to be some fun. He, I understand, is a guy much like ourselves, you know, likes to have a little fun with the, you know, the political, the politics, if you will. Here's some breaking news in our backyard. You know, Gableman, the corrupted former Supreme Court Justice, special sauce prosecutor. Well, he was ordered by a second judge today who was astonished she would ever have to say this in open court. Ordered by a second judge today to stop destroying public records. A little bit of the reporting from the Journal Sentinel, Patrick Marley. A second judge Wednesday. A second judge. When two judges have to tell a former Supreme Court justice, stop breaking the law, please. A second judge Wednesday ordered Wisconsin Republicans to prevent the destruction of public records as they review the 2020 election. Oh, yeah, at taxpayer expense. Did we forget that part? We're all paying for this crap and hogwash. What would Joe Biden call it? Malarkey. Dane County Circuit Judge Valerie Bailey Ryan said she was compelled to issue an order, but was astonished she had to do it because the review was being overseen by a former corrupted state Supreme Court Justice Michael Big Lie Gableman. Here is the quote from the judge. I'm frankly amazed that I have to say don't destroy records that are subject to an open records request or ordered that to occur. I think all of us know what the law is, Bailey Reed said at the end of a 30-minute hearing. She said the former Justice Gableman, corrupted, should know what records the law requires and has an ethical obligation to follow it. Well, that's where you're going to lose Gableman. He doesn't feel like he's got an ethical obligation to do a damn thing. You can't make him. You and what army judge? Gableman has contended he's exempt from ethics. No, he's exempt from retaining records because the lawmakers who hired him are not required to hold on to records under state law. Because they are also unethical bastards, see Robin Voss. You know, Republicans effectively exempted themselves from the open records laws. So he's not entirely wrong when he makes that claim. A little bit more from the judge, though. Bailey Reen issued her order 2 weeks after Dane County Circuit Judge Frank Remington issued a similar order in an open records lawsuit. Those two lawsuits and a third one were brought by American Oversight, a liberal group that has been tracking the assembly review of the presidential election. That's a very nice way of saying it. A month ago, Bailey Reen found Assembly Speaker Robin Voss of Rochester in contempt of court. Well, he is certainly contemptuous. for failing to release records about the election review. She will determine later whether Voss has now met the obligation. He hasn't. And whether he should be fined. He should. Joe Biden beat Donald Trump. Now, the fact that I've got to repeat this every time this story or some story about Gableman is printed is a little galling, but I'm going to read the little kicker here. Joe Biden beat Donald Trump by 21,000 votes in Wisconsin. I know you don't believe it, CJ, but it's true. Recounts and courts upheld those results. Are you listening, Gary? Are you listening, Lou? Just wondering. But Assembly Republicans say they wanted more review and gave Gableman about $700,000 to look into it. And Gableman has said Republican lawmakers should strongly consider rescinding the state's 10 electoral votes for Biden, a move that scholars, attorneys, and everyone with a brain, including Gableman's own lawyer, James Bopp Jr., have said is legally impossible. Impossible, I tell you. During Wednesday's hearing, that's today, folks, Bailey Reen repeatedly said she could not believe she had to issue her order on public record, saying she was astounded that she would have to take such a step to ensure a former justice, corrupted, was following the law. Attorneys for the legislature told Gableman in October he was required to hang on to records. So it's not like he wasn't instructed of his legal slash ethical obligation here, folks. But Gableman made his own determination he didn't want to do so. You know, because he used to be a Supreme Court justice. So corrupted, though, he couldn't even run for re-election as an incumbent. They all win. Why didn't he run again? Because even he knew the writing was on the wall. He was so corrupted, he knew he was unelectable. A little bit more here. Ronald Stadler, an attorney for the Assembly, said Wednesday he could tell Gableman not to delete records, but contended he had no way to prevent him from doing so, though Voss and Assembly Chief Clerk Todd Blazell determined when and whether to pay the fat man. So in other words, we can't make him follow the law. All my boss could do is withhold his paycheck. That's their, you know, enforcement mechanism.
My goodness, you'd think the party of fiscal responsibility would have a little bit more control over the people they contract to do their dirty work.
Here's what Stadler told the judge today. An order from this court simply telling me to tell somebody to comply with the law is a non-event. So telling the legislative attorney for the Republicans to make Gableman not break the law is more than the capability of the Republican lawyer. Apparently, you know, I can't make him follow the law. A little bit more. Bailey Reen reacted skeptically. Yeah, I did too. I just can't believe the explanation is we can't control our contractors, right? Well, you can't cut loose the contractor. A little bit more here from the judge. That just doesn't seem to be satisfactory to the court since the contractors work for the Assembly. She said that Voss, Blazell, and the Assembly as an institution have an obligation to make sure Gableman hung on to the records that were created over 3 months into the summer and all of 2021. These contractors are their agents. They're under their control. So if those records get destroyed, I'm not holding the contractors in contempt. I'm holding the people that are in control of those contractors in contempt because they're the ones that are responsible for the public records for that three-month period. Yeah, Voss would look good in, you know, a jumpsuit. Crowbar Motel for you, Speaker Boss Voss. Interesting. More Devil's Advocates. Dom Salvia joins us next. I see him waiting in the Zoom waiting room. Maybe I'll make him wait. Such an impatient bastard. And his fine guest, he's booked Chaz Stevens. Ban the Bible, I tell ya. The happier happy hour, it's going to roll right on. Come back, more Devils.
Shame on you.
What? Shame on you.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?